bit of a difference on why people say he did so. But unfortunately, we don't focus on the whole conversation when we read these scriptures. We focus on one verse because at one point there was a guy at a sporting event with a sign that had that verse. Except that verse can't be separated from the rest of these. Because you can't read verse 3:16 without continuing on into 3:17. You can't read what God so loved the world and why that matters without hearing Jesus' conversation with Nicodemus. Because all of that together is what Jesus is saying, not just one phrase on a sign at a football game. Now, don't get me wrong, 3:16 is an all-time great, but it's not all of the verses together. And so let's take a minute and look at all that Jesus is saying here at his late night visitor. Now, the whole late night visitor part is something we need to talk about. Because Nicodemus could either have come because he doesn't want everybody else in his social groups to know that he kind of is dipping his feet into following Jesus. He's a Pharisee. He's one of the Sanhedrin, one of the big leaders within his community. And he's not exactly quite ready to listen and tell them to pound sand and follow Jesus openly, but he's ready to almost get there. So there's an element of fear and worry in Nicodemus. The other possibility that could be here is that Nicodemus is coming because he wants some one-on-one time with Jesus. I don't know about you, but coming late at night, I'm not exactly my most focused, we'll call it. I'm a bit ready to think about how nice that pillow is. So if you want to lean one way, but I personally lean more on the Nicodemus isn't quite ready to jump into the pool. Now, he does at times defend Jesus openly. When the chief priests and scribes and the temple police are looking to arrest Jesus in John 7, Nicodemus is the one who reminds them that they must put him on trial first. When Jesus has died and Joseph of Arimathea comes and claims the body, Nicodemus is one who assists. So he is either a secret disciple or at least somebody who is almost there. And he comes at night and he wants to know. He wants to affirm who Jesus is, but Jesus doesn't want to just deal in platitudes. He wants to get down to business. That he wants to talk to him about his teachings. And he says to Nicodemus, this Pharisee and leader of the church, this part of this group of people who love the law so much that they are hamstrung by their love of the law. Instead of following God in a more loose format, as the law actually was, they had built it up, built up the legalism of the law. And so instead of this beautiful, living law of God guiding and helping us to live out our ways to worship, they had built it up into a burden. And so we have Jesus here trying to call him on the carpet as politely as you can. You must first be born from above. And now I understand some of us might have heard the phrase, be born again. Well, hear the Greek. Because the Greek doesn't say again. It says born from above. And that matters. Because to be born again would have been the word, a different word, a different phrase, a different connotation. Instead, Jesus is telling us not to be born again, but to be born from above. To be born from God, to be born of God, of God's commands. It doesn't mean what we have made it to be. Because it's about turning. Think about why Jesus brings up baptism very early on in this conversation. Born of water and spirit. That's baptism. The baptism Jesus knew was not a, I wish to believe, but I wish to atone. I wish to turn away from the way I've been. I wish to change how I have acted, how I have sinned, who I have let myself become. I don't wish to do that. I wish to publicly commit before God to turning away from that. And so Jesus tells Nicodemus, you have to turn away. Turn around. Be born of the Spirit and of the waters. Don't just love the legalism of the law. Come on, Nicodemus. Love the law as it sits in your heart, as it helps you live out. Don't treat it as this legalism point. Live it out. Let the water of baptism be a water that changes your world and your life. Let the redemption you seek be moved forward. And don't slip back like you've been. You see, there's an identity in this that plays out here. There's an identity dealing with Jesus here. Because Nicodemus comes with a lot of tags on him. The first tag is he is a religious leader. He is a Pharisee. He's got all of these things that tell you what he is. But Jesus doesn't want you to identify that way. He wants you to show out and show up about whose you are. He doesn't want you to say, I'm so-and-so's grandson and have been a Levite of this group, of this part, of this tribe. Identity used to matter a lot in Jesus' day. When you read somebody's name, there is this laundry list of ancestors you get. He is the son of, and the son of, and the son of. You know, you get some of this in a lot of Norse names. Eric's son, Harold's son. A lot of those names are son of. So I would be William Williamson. Really redundant. Great. The fact of the matter is your identity was tied into your tribe. But Jesus is getting that moved. He's moving the margins. He's moving things. Because it doesn't matter who your predecessors were for him. It doesn't matter who your ancestors were. It matters what you do and how you do it. How you follow matters to Jesus, not how great and wonderful your grandfather was. Jesus deals with our actions in the moment, how we live and serve, how we love one another, not how our grand or great-grand or great-great-grandparents did. You're the one who matters for you. Now, talking about any format of identity now kind of is a bit of a sticky subject, isn't it? But the reality is that throughout history, who we are, what we are, has played an outsized role. Go to down in the city, and where do you go? Little Italy, Chinatown, locations based around identity. In Chicago, you have the Polish, the Ukrainian suburbs. You have the German part of town. Where I grew up, you had the Dutch part of town, the Catholic part of town, and somewhere separate from that, not sure how, was the Polish side of town, which was also the Catholic part of town. It's West Michigan. We're a special breed over there. The reality is that all of this has kind of built up. And it's built up into you where and whose you are. Your allegiance in Jesus' time was to your family, to the family unit. But we've seen Jesus talk before about how he's come to what? Divide families, to set them apart. to create divisions, because that's going to happen. Because he doesn't want us to be content with how things have been. He wants us to live into his call and his teachings, to live out the law in our lives. And that is going to be a problem. And for him, it doesn't matter who the disciples are, what they are. Nicodemus could be son of King Herod for all Jesus cares. I could be son of William and Barbara, grandson of Steve and Edith and Richard and Elizabeth, and none of that matters, because how I serve is what matters, not how my grandparents served or my parents. The reality is each one of us must be born from above. We have to live out and live into what God has commanded. That's what this all means. Be born from above. Not again, but of God. That's a little more challenging for all of us. What is our primary allegiance? What is our primary identity? Is it that we are Christian? Is it that we are followers of God? Children of God? Is that our primary allegiance? Or is it something else? Is child of God the label we choose to wear? Because if we get from there, that identity, the Christian identity, not one that comes in the middle of the night kind of worried and a little squirrely about, is anybody seeing me talking to Jesus? Move past that worry and fear. Live into the challenge that is living out God's call. Because if you want to get to the point where God so loved the world that he gave his only son, you have to get to the point of whosoever believed in him. If you believed in him, if you believe in him, it means you set you aside for him. It means what you want is number two to what he wants. It means the challenge is whatever politics you want to play across the spectrum, Democrat, Republican, Libertarian, whatever you want to identify yourself as, guess what? The number one is you're a Christian first. That's what Jesus wants. None of the politics we have. None of that. None of that. When one party says it's okay to hate the other, guess what? They're wrong. Because when we come here and we identify ourselves as children of God, that means whatever anybody else tells us outside of what God has said is wrong. It means God is right in our world, and whatever we have to do within ourselves to change how we have lived, how we have belittled one another, how we have lessened one another, no matter who they are. If we want to say and hold up 3:16, that God so loved the world, we have to love that world too. And that means we can't hate one another. We can't argue and hate anymore. Brothers and sisters, how do we think God looks at us right now? With all the anger and hatred around us, how do we think God feels when his children scream at each other across the aisle and tell one another, you are wrong because I am right? How do you think God is? How is that being born from above? Is that, or is that the born from below that Christ tells us not to be? So my brothers and sisters, may we be the change in this world, the change for the better, the change that God commands all of us to be. Brothers and sisters, may we love one another. May we follow into the world that God so loved, and tell one another of that love. instead of letting ourselves be angry and hate one another. Amen. And now, children of God, let us respond to him through our gifts.